The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Something big is happening at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Take up to $15,000 off all remaining 2018 Cadillacs. It's all going on now during the Big Win Sales event. You can't miss up to $15,000 off new Cadillacs. Just ask for General Manager Brian Danahy, our good friend here on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, and he'll take up to $15,000 off your next Cadillac. All the details are at the dealership. Get to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or click edmorsecadillactampa.com. That's edmorsecadillactampa.com. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, pick your car, now pick your payment. That's right, pick your car, now pick your payment. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com is the website. You will see all kinds of incredible options there. They are right there on Causeway Boulevard for you in Brandon. So easy to get to. Beautiful dealership. Ira and I have been out there several times, and all new 2018 Cadillacs get 0% financing for up to 60 months, plus receive $2,000 down payment assistance at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Their website, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. That's where you get it started, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. And here's Ira. Happy Tuesday. The Ira Kaufman Podcast is here. August 14th. The dog days of training camp continue. And the star of the show, of course, is Mr. Ira Kaufman, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. The D-Camper is here. We are at One Buck Palace in our special room, Ira. You're looking good there. You got your Ed Morse colors on, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, great to hear those offers. How are you?
Doing well. Post-birthday, baby. Post-birthday podcast. Celebrated in style. Saturday night, went to a comedy club.
No,
Palm Harbor. Right down the road from the boss over here. And they put us right up front, which is a problem because I figure the guy's going to interact with the audience. Who's celebrating a birthday? Then they find out, you know, how old I am. Then they find out I work for Joe Bucks Fan. That's double jeopardy over there. I figure I was a dead man. But the guy never asked. He never engaged the audience over there. But he did fire off about 48 one-liners. So it was good. It was a good night with some friends.
You're thinking the same thing I'm thinking. A year or so ago, I saw Dice in Vegas, only to say, you know, I'm not a huge Dice fan, but okay, I wanted to see his shtick, you know, just to say I've seen it, even though it's 25, 30 years old. I made sure I had as far back in the room as I could find sit because I didn't want to become a target.
Did he do Jack and Jill Went Up the Hill?
Oh, yeah, he did all the nursery rhymes, which are classic. Now what was the spider?
Oh, yeah, Itsy Bitsy Spider.
Sat down beside her.
Oh, Isbitz, this is a true story.
Jack
but,
and Jill went up the
must
hill.
Have been 5, 10 years ago. We went out with another couple down at Coconuts. I think it's Madeira Beach or something or whatever.
I think it's Coconuts where you were in Palm Harbor, too.
Up and down the beaches, Gulf Boulevard.
St. Pete Beach?
Yeah, there's some comedy clubs. And,
I thought that was a different kind of club.
So we saw, see where your mind is over
there.
Well,
I'm familiar with that one.
Anyway, there was a female comic. She was from Tennessee or whatever. She had the southern twang and everything. And, you know, she starts going around the room. You know, who's doing a birthday? Who's got this? How many years you're married? She lands on me. Boom. She's clobbering me. She's throwing lefts and rights, you know, with how'd you marry this guy? She's talking to my wife. I tried to come back on her. Now, and I learned a lesson. Never tangle with a professional comedian.
Oh.
You can't win. First of all, they got the audience all on their side.
Oh, I would have paid to see this.
So I threw a couple of haymakers, and I got a couple of laughs. Then she came back. She had me pummeled on the ropes. It was so bad. Isbitz, I went up and went to the men's room and didn't come out for 20 minutes.
Wow.
It was a beatdown. Well, I felt like Ryan Smith against Julio Jones.
Well, Steve got a beatdown. I don't think he wants to get into it. But Steve was once the target of Jackie the Joke Man Martling at a comedy nightclub.
Well, I'll let him tell that story in his own time, but he's got other topics to cover today. I understand that.
It's funny. I was just thinking of that, but I'm not going to tell that story now.
Don't mess with a professional comic, Steve. Don't do it.
No, it's not a good idea, but I could see you throwing some haymakers
at
him.
That would have been classic. Ira tangling with a professional comedian.
I could see you going for it there, but hey, it's all part of the fun, all part of the show. A couple of business things to get out of the way, Ira, and we're excited about them. Wednesday, August 22nd, you will be at Hooters on Hillsborough Avenue.
Correct.
Drafting in the Todd Wright Fantasy Football, Joe Bucks Fan League. Live draft right there. Two calendar girls confirmed. What you have to do is, if you want to play, if you want to get in the league, it's a season-long league, you email your name and your phone number to toddwrightfantasyfootball@gmail.com. Info is on the website, and we're filling up the league. It's going to be fun. Hopefully we'll get good weather this year, but Wednesday, August 22nd, we want you out there, probably 6:30, you know, order some food.
Show up on time if you get picked. Show up.
Get, you know, you will get the rules, get there on time, and we draft sharp at 7. Todd runs a very swift draft. It's going to be fun, and there's some good prizes. Again, last year's winners going to opening day of the Bucks at home, the home opener. So a lot of fun. Email Todd Wright, fantasyfootball@gmail.com. If you want to play, you got to be there to play with the Sage, myself, Todd. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I was left out of Hooters last year. Todd, you know, went over all the rosters quickly. Yeah, this one looks good. Thumbs up for this one. Hey, Kaufman, what are you, crazy? You took this guy in the third round. He's got a busted kneecap. All I know is next thing I know, 4 months later, I'm in the semifinals over there. I'm proud of my showing as a neophyte. As a neophyte.
And now, Ira, we are right now, as we speak, 26 days from the Buccaneers taking the field. FanRetreat.com, head over there. The Bourbon Street Takeover, road trip of the season. A lot of layers to it, a lot of ways to get involved, a lot of ways to get tickets. FanRetreat did a great thing. They threw out $40 off discount last week to anybody buying Bucks tickets all season. $40 off every order. Whoa. Loads of orders came in. It was very exciting stuff. And that deal was not just for the New Orleans game, but for every Bucks game of the year, because FanRetreat.com is your home for all event tickets, concerts, Bucks games, baseball games, you name it, and of course all your travel as well. All the details on the Bourbon Street Takeover right there. Popular retreats at FanRetreat.com. Again, FanRetreat.com. The commish will be out there. Ira, you've heard it all here before. Lee, the night before, big sports bar party, sort of a pep rally before you go out to dinner or get into your nighttime activity. It's all free.
And you're hinting around at some special guests over there. We'll see if you can pull anything up.
I've hinted, we'll, and I've talked to somebody, and hopefully that'll come through. But the special guest is all the stick carriers, all the fans, and this really cool event from FanRetreat.com. So email them if you have any questions. You go to their website, you'll see it all. So, Sage, of course, we heard those offers from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. We can talk a bit about them later. Now, what's exciting, Ira, is here we're at practice. We finished practice, and I'm going to throw you one topic right out of the gate. We didn't prep this podcast at all. You and Lee mowing down the pork chops and the broccoli, and the scent in this room is going to be
very... I broke my knife cutting that pork chop. I mean, I literally broke my knife on it.
I thought I was going to break my fork on it, but I know what you're talking about. The chocolate eclairs were superb.
And the salad. Hats off to the salad. Strong. Strong stuff.
No beets, but hey.
That's all right.
Bring your own beets. That's the way they do it here at $1. All right, Sage, look. Today, Dirk Koetter comes out, and he says that best practice of the year. Best practice. Love the energy. Sometimes guys come off a day off, they're sluggish, they're not into it. Today, start to finish, best practice of the year. Saturday comes out, he says they're sluggish. Is he playing mind games? Is he just calling it as he sees it? I mean, he said some other things this year in practice, offense, defense, whatever. I mean,
he's a master of the mind meld. You know, he's like the Dr. Spock of the NFL, and he's not the only coach that does this kind of stuff. He subtly tries to manipulate this team, get them ready to scrimmage the Titans and then play the Titans. And, yeah, you know, good cop, bad cop, Lee, you know, wasn't happy with Saturday. He was thought today was much better. For the naked eye, from the observer, I didn't see all that much difference between the energy today and Saturday. You know, he brings them down, then he pulls them back up. Look, Cutter's admitted over the years he does play some mind games, Lee. He's pretty good at it, too. So, for his sake, I hope this one works.
Two things that jumped out to me in practice were receivers were excellent. I posted a video Tuesday morning on JoeBucksFan.com. As far as red zone play and red zone work, Jameis Winston and Adam Humphries had a hookup that was textbook perfect. I mean, the throw was perfect.
Right in that corner?
Yeah, the catch was perfect over the shoulder. Humphries pulled it in. Justin Evans had fantastic coverage on Humphries. It didn't matter. It was everything about that was perfect. And that should be on a coaching clinic somewhere. Brent Grimes made a first appearance in 2 weeks. They were doing 7-on-7s at the far end of the field. I just happened to get there. I got there just in time. I got video of it where it looks like Grimes and D-Jex are coming into my face.
It's like the Zapruder film over there at the Kemper. I don't know how you got that. Well, you're in a perfect vantage point. You weren't on a grassy knoll, but you got a good vantage.
Sometimes
point.
With photography, and I'm learning the same way with videography, that it's just the right place, right time. It's more luck than anything, than skill at times.
So you stride for stride.
Stride for stride. He boxed out DeSean Jackson. He got in front of him. It was not a bad pass at all. It was almost what a receiver would want, right at belt level where he can make a basket catch. And Grimes just had position on DeSean, like I said, step for step down the right sideline. And he stepped in front of DeSean Jackson at the right time, boxed him out, pulled down a pickoff. And typical Grimes, his celebration, he jumped up. You know, he had his arms spread out like he was embracing Miko after a long absence. And he was circling around the end zone. You know, his little celebration shtick, it was pretty cool. But you could tell he was happy as heck to get back. Even though he was technically off the field, he was injured. I thought it was also cool that it looked like he was playing center field. He's out there in shorts. He could be on the sidelines, could have been indoors working out. But for 2 weeks, Grimes was on the field, just eyeballing the plays, see if he can get a read on plays, which I think that's the definition of a professional.
Always a good day, Steve, for Buff fans, when Brent Grimes is back on the football field. Now, speaking of Grimes, let me throw this out at you before you attack me over there. Memo to Mike Smith. September 9th, I believe, is the game. Wherever Michael Thomas goes, that's where you send 24. Shadow that man. We don't want to see a repeat of Mercedes-Benz Stadium and Julio Jones. By the way, nobody can believe this. Julio Jones scored 3 touchdowns all season. 2 of them came against the Bucs. The rest of the year, he had 1 touchdown. 1. Now, the guy's a fantastic player. There's no question about it. But he had 250 yards against the Bucs that day. We're all sitting up in the press box saying, where the heck's Grimes?
Yeah.
Where the heck's Grimes? He's covering Mohamed Sanu. We can't have that. So there's my little 2 cents to Mike Smith. Send your best against their best. Look, there's a big drop-off from Michael Thomas to the rest of the Saints' wide receiver corps. Uh-huh. It's a big drop-off.
2 things there, Ira. First, Grimes wasn't covering Sanu because Sanu threw one of the damn passes.
His pass rush
couldn't get after.
One of them to Julio Jones, right?
Exactly. That was my point. You know, he wasn't covering Sanu on that play. Maybe it would have been better if he was blitzing or something. But the Grimes thing, I wanted to throw at you, Ira. Grimes came out today, and you were there for his news conference right in front of his face there. He flat out said with a lot of confidence and a lot of detail that Vernon Hargrave's much more comfortable playing inside. He explained why, that he's good at picking up the checks, and there's so much going on when you play nickel that he doesn't have time to think and he can just react outside. He thinks too much. And he was adamant, clear, painting lines of that, hey, this guy's much better inside. That's not what Bucs fans want to hear. And Hargraves, before he got hurt, was training outside. What do you think?
This goes along with the broader picture of, ain't it beautiful how sometimes the players really get to the point and you don't hear it from the coaches? For example, I believe there were a couple of players this year when they were talking about the offensive line, and a player said, hey, we got Jensen. Marpet returns to his natural position at guard where I think he's better suited. We didn't hear that from the coaches last year. We didn't hear that. And now here comes Grimes with all kinds of candor and honesty that Buck fans appreciate. One of the reasons we love Grimes, besides the fact he's a heck of a football player. And he's telling us that he's reinforcing what we think about Hargraves, is that he could be an effective nickelback, but he's probably ill-suited to play the outside. I know what you're going to say, Lee, about drafting him.
Yeah.
But I'll say it again. The nickel plays 70% of the time, and if he's an effective nickel player, I'm not complaining if I'm a Buck fan. But again, we got to hear it from Brent Grimes when I don't think Hargraves is going to win that outside job opposite Grimes.
I agree with you, but I have to be fair. Cutter all but said that in the NFL owners' meetings back in Orlando. Was it March, I think?
There? March, yeah.
Where he, in so many words, he said any NFL team would be fortunate as heck to have Vernon Hargraves as a nickel corner. And so that's all but admitting he's a better nickel than an outside guy. When he was saying that, it's like, okay. Now, to go back with Grimes, a brief moment. When you were saying Julio Jones only scored 1 touchdown outside
than that game. Yeah.
Well, that tells me every stinking team that played the Falcons figured out how to keep Jones out of the end zone, with one exception. Mm-hmm. But yet Mike Smith couldn't, and he's got one of the better corners in the league. As you stated, we were sitting up at their press box, all three of us were there, and we weren't the only ones. We were like shaking our heads and looking at each other like, why isn't Grimes on Julio Jones? And then they came out with that stinking bull story that, oh, we couldn't figure out a way. We tried 14 different ways.
We didn't know where he was going to line up.
Yeah, we didn't know where he was going to line up. Give me a break. How big is the guy? 6'6"? We couldn't figure out how to put him on Julio Jones. We tried 14 different ways or 12 different ways, whatever they said. But yet every other team figured it out.
I see Jones flanked to the left, and then I see Ryan Smith playing right cornerback.
And then you wanted to run to the bathroom.
Uh-oh.
I don't want to dwell on this. I don't want to argue. I want to go easy on you today. I know it was
but
your birthday.
But you are writing some stuff down.
Well, I wrote this down 10 minutes ago when you said it, because I know a lot of Bucks fans drove off the road or turned off the podcast even in disbelief.
Don't do that.
I'm kidding on the turn off the podcast part. But you know what, Sage? You said, quote, Dirk Cutter's pretty good at it, referring to mind games. How's he pretty good at it? Went 5-11. Are you talking about torturing people with Doug Martin? Is that the mind game? I mean, come on, man.
Well,
nah.
He was successful at it in 2016.
He was.
I give a pass for 2017.
All right.
He better be better at it in 2018.
I just have to throw that out there. Now, at cornerback, another thing Grimes said, they asked him about Carlton Davis, and he talked about, oh, man, he's a long-arm guy. You see how good he is in practice at press coverage. Well, Rondé Barber's on the broadcast the other night, Ira, talking about how Mike Smith loves to have his corners playing off coverage, which Grimes explained is very complex. He prefers it personally, but it's very complex. You got to train your eyes. You got to know what to do, and it's not really the best thing for young players. So here we have a conundrum, and you think Smith is going to be flexible at some point here?
He has to be. Lee, it's a big part of coaching. It's a big part of coaching success. I think it's one of the great things about Belichick. There's so many things that are outstanding about him. This one's near the top three maybe. How he adapts a system and a scheme to take advantage of the talent that he's got and put his players in the best position to succeed. Now, look, what have we heard about Carlton Davis since the day that the Bucks drafted him? He likes to play press coverage. Why would you play him 10 yards off the line of scrimmage? Why would you do that? Grimes might like it. That's fine.
He's got a body of work, too.
And Grimes says it gives you a better look at the overall defense and you're looking straight at the quarterback. But why make things harder for Carlton Davis? Make him more comfortable.
For a rookie, exactly.
And if he struggles on press coverage in the NFL, then you make an adjustment.
How many times, Steve, you probably can't even count that high, how many times I've written, and our readers go bananas whenever I write this. I said Mike Smith works well with veteran corners. I use Robert McClain, as an example.
Here it comes.
But they can't develop rookies. Grimes basically just said that. He said it's complicated to play off. Hello?
Yeah, it's almost as if he was saying, to go to Lee's point, oh, we can develop him, but it takes years to figure out how to really play off coverage well, and if that's Mike Smith's defense, then it's a bad fit. One thing I noticed in the video watching the game again from Thursday night is sometimes you saw Carlton Davis, they're playing the off coverage, he'd be 5 yards off the guy, 5.5, the other guy on the other side's 8. And it was as if he was like allergic to, it feels too far away, even though it is off coverage.
Good point.
I don't know.
Hey, I want to mention one more thing. What Lee mentioned, the receivers having a really good day at practice. I did my column on Jim Miller the other day. I had a lengthy talk with him watching practice on Saturday from Sirius, XM, moving the chains. Miller played the quarterback position. He knows what he's talking
had
about.
Had a cup of coffee in his building.
Cup of coffee, but he went 11-2 one year with the Bears.
Yeah.
11-2.
With the Bears.
And beat the Bucks twice in the process.
I had to make an edit to that column, Ira.
What do you mean an edit? He didn't go 11-2?
I love tweaking him here. This is fantastic. He's got a Super Bowl ring.
You did. That was a good tweak.
That. Tom Brady, 2004.
May I continue, Steven? May
yes.
I continue? That
Please.
Was a good tweak, by the way. You're right. I thought you would tell me you needed a correction or
no,
something.
No,
but
no, no.
There you go. What's one of the first things that Miller said, and he dwelled on it about 5 times in 15 minutes? Their weapons are fantastic.
Yeah.
Their weapons... I think if I asked them, do they have the best group of targets, when you include tight ends, in the National Football League, I think Miller would have said yes. He thinks these guys are tremendous. And, boy, to average 20, 21 points last year, that can't happen. That can't happen.
Well,
you got all these guys. You're 6 deep. Humphreys is your 4th receiver. You got 2 outstanding tight ends. They caught 6 touchdowns apiece. And Howard was a rookie. You figure he's going to get better. Brate catches every damn pass you throw to him. If he drops the ball, I'm dropping my remote. I'm so shocked. You know what I'm saying,
Lee? Yeah.
You don't drop anything.
You're absolutely right.
Use your damn weapons. Spread them out and use them.
You're not wrong whatsoever. Miller's not wrong. And with the possible exception of the Steelers, I don't know who has a better group of receivers than the Bucs. Now, that's going to lead to something I was going to bring up with Steve. We didn't do any show prep. So, Steve, well, I'm going to ask him, may come as a shock to him, but I'd like to get his response. This shows two things. One, the defense stunk. I think we know that. But two, the red zone. And Cutter, at the NFL's owners meeting in March, I was a big focus was red zone. And I saw that play today between Humphreys and Jameis. Like, wow, where was this last year? Where was this, you know? Now, but I'm going to ask you, Steve, something here. I'm starting to get the impression, Steve, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just looking for your feedback. I'm starting to get the impression that you're sick of the hype of Chris Godwin, and you're not overly blown away that Adams Humphreys could start for other teams.
Yeah, we've kind of talked about that here. I can't name a team that Adam Humphreys would start for.
You're not knocking him as a number four receiver.
Absolutely not. I just don't know a team where he could line up outside and be the starting receiver.
And last year I could name a couple.
I like Godwin a lot. There's nothing not to like. Mike Evans, again, this weekend on TV, on the halftime show, was talking about Godwin's going to be a number one in this league.
You're not questioning the depth of the
I don't question receiver. The talent. He's a phenomenal third-round pick. Just let's see him catch a season's worth of balls, you know, build on what he finished the season last year, which was his first touchdown.
But you agree with us that this team is not bereft of targets.
No, they're loaded. Loaded.
Love that, bereft.
And you know what? If Jason Light drafted the right guys, which it completely appears he is, Godwin will take a leap in year two and be that much better. And O.J. Howard, same thing. And that's two big pieces of the puzzle.
And DeSean Jackson's not exactly having a bad camp, Lee.
A very good camp.
Great camp.
Ira, I don't know how much you got to listen to Miller and Kerwin when they were here Saturday. They're moving and changing the show. It's exclusive on SiriusXM NFL Radio. And I know you have SiriusXM.
And he had a bunch of Buck guests, right? He had a bunch of players.
Only Bucks guests. I mean, it was a Buck-centric show for
right.
3 hours. And I know you have SiriusXM.
I do.
Because you're during the football season, you're a weekly guest with Chris Mad Dog Russo on Mad Dog Radio. But the players, almost to a man, were raving how much better this year O.J. Howard is. And that's like, wow, you know, that really got my attention, almost to a man, when, you know, they would ask him, what are some players that are doing well? And they would, right away, they start talking O.J. Howard, how he's so much better.
I don't think he's a guy that's going to catch 55, 60 passes, but the ones he catches, guys, they're big plays. I think he averaged 15 or 16 yards a catch. That's really strong for a wide receiver, let alone a tight end.
And what does Dirk Cutter crave? Explosive plays.
This whole thing sets up, just to me, it's such a phenomenal setup, because Ryan Fitzpatrick has never played with an arsenal of weapons like this, and now he knows the offense. He's even played a few games in the offense. He's got to be drooling, and it's just going to make it very interesting if he just starts using the weapons. Oh, there's always an open guy with incredible hands.
Look. And you know, the Saints have a decent defense, but it's not a fabulous defense. It's
okay.
It was a lot better than the Buck defense last year. Certainly.
What was it?
And they got Lattimore. He's a stud. Cameron Jordan. Donovan Smith. You better have that chin strap buckled up, because he's coming. They got the Davenport kid.
Didn't he get hurt? Davenport? I mean, I'm not serious.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. Steve, your point's well taken. There's no reason in the world the Bucs can't put points up at the Superdome week one.
No, I'll give you a nice nugget, a stat nugget. I know you love these nuggets, Ira.
Here we go, baby.
Juicy nugget for you, Sage. But first, I will remind everybody that your podcast is available on iTunes. You can subscribe. It's free. You get a free alert. Podbean, podbean.com. Great website to listen online or on your phone. Can subscribe there as well. Leave a comment. And at Google Play. You're still there on the Google Play
charts. How
are we
doing on our rankings, Steve?
Well,
how are we doing?
We're still there in the top 50, but I was a little nervous because we had a game day podcast last time, and a lot of people listen to the podcast a day later, right? I'll catch up to Ira later, but, you know, after a game, I don't want to hear what Ira had to say before the game.
Dated.
It gets a little stale. So I was worried that we might lose a little bit, but we're still there, and, of course, we will be ascending, but that's Google Play, great app.
And we want those comments, Steven. We want those comments.
We love comments. Oh, you know what? When you guys chatter here a little bit later, I'll pull them up. There's a couple of good ones, and I did promise to read some comments. Now, the nugget, Ira, which should uplift the Bucks fans as we yearn for uplifting news here. This nugget, the team who made the playoffs last year with the worst third down defense, the playoff team with the worst third down defense last year, was the New Orleans Saints, giving it up 41% on third down. That was sixth worst in the NFL.
Wow. But it was five spots higher than the Bucs.
And the Bucs, of course, were were in last at 48.1%.
48.1%.
And the year before, they were the best third down defense. So I'll throw this to you, and we'll talk now about the preseason game. Bucs, first half. Dolphins were 0-6 on third down. Mike Smith's magic on third down is back.
Well, before we shower praise on Smith, I told Smith this after practice on Saturday when I saw him. I go, Mike, every time the camera was on you and you were in that press box, you're holding your head up. Yeah, can't you smile a little bit? Yeah, the first half, 0-6 on third down. He just laughing. That was the story of the game, by the way. You know, just like the Buck offense last year, very good between the 20s. The Bucs didn't shut down the Dolphins Thursday night. Far from it. Between the 20s, they moved the ball like heck. But they didn't cash in the red zone. They weren't good on third down. And the Buck offense in the first half was good in the red zone. Very refreshing to see touchdowns rather than field goals or missed field goals. And we'll get to Mr. Catanzaro in due time, right? Yeah, I mean, look, you don't want to read too much into a preseason game, Lee. Especially when the starters are usually playing one or two series. But I think it's important. Steve chewed me out a couple weeks ago. What are you talking about? Preseason means nothing. Momentum is nothing. I think you got to get into the when a team that's had 10 years without a playoff spot, you got to get into the habit of winning. And it's not going to – nobody's going to remember the Miami game when the games start.
Forget about it
but,
in September.
But, you know, establish a culture, Lee. Establish a culture. A guest later on Tuesday, who's coming to One Buck Place, Tony Dungy, to talk about his Ring of Honor. That's what he did. He established a winning culture in Tampa. I think we need that once again because, boy, we can't have another last place finish, Lee. You just can't finish in the basement.
Well,
again.
If it's last place again, there's going to be possible house cleaning.
I think it's 6 out of 7 years. I mean, that's absurd. That's absolutely crazy. You know, the Bucs won this division the first year, the debut year of the division. The Bucs won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
2002.
And ever since then.
And they won it in 2005 and they won it in 2007. I mean, that's three early times. You thought they were the power of the NFC South. And since then, oh boy, Lee. Oh boy.
What was the turning point from the Bucs becoming also ran the division? I'm thinking it was a Carolina game here where Kenyatta Walker, the immortal Kenyatta Walker, was so abused by Julius Peppers. I think there was four plays in a row where he got a penalty.
That was a big one. And of course, that year, and again, with Dungy coming to town, coming into One Buck, it was that infamous game against the Colts.
Oh, they couldn't close it out.
Bucks up, I believe it was, might have been 35-14.
Was that when Jermaine Phillips got abused? John Lynch got hurt? Mike Allstott got hurt?
I don't think it was Jermaine Phillips. It was another guy, a scrub. Brian Kelly went out, and they just picked on the scrub unmercifully.
Mike Allstott got hurt on a play. If I remember correctly, his helmet hit Joe Gervais' knee. Gervais was never the same. Allstott went out with a concussion. It was just a nightmare.
And it was Dungy's birthday, Steve. I mean, it was just a juxtaposition of they were up 35-14 with 6 minutes left at home. That doesn't happen to the Buck defense.
All right, Sage, you mentioned Tony Dungy's coming in here. I got a question for you because last year John Gruden was here. His Ring of Honor press conference, and he was here during Hard Knocks and out of practice. And Cutter said that he met with Gruden for about an hour and a half, talking ball and playbooks and whatever. Well, Tony Dungy's probably going to meet with Cutter. They'll spend time in his office and all that. What does Tony Dungy talk to Cutter about? What's the message maybe that he has for him? Or what do you think those two chat about?
I don't think it's going to be about X's and O's because Dungy wasn't about X's and O's necessarily, although we certainly knew them. I think he might talk to Cutter about establishing stronger bonds between the players and the community. Dungy was big on that. He got that from Chuck Knoll. Never forgot that. You're a football player. That's what you do. That's not who you are. That kind of things. Certainly, Cutter's not going to try to pick up any offensive tips from Tony Dungy. Now, having said that, and you might laugh, Lee, and I understand that, but let's remember, after Gruden's first 6 years in Tampa, so it was going into Gruden's what turned out to be his last year in 08, I did a breakdown for the Tribune. I did one. It was a shocker. It was one of the most shocking stories I've ever done. you know, took a tip from Thomas Bassinger and did a data breakdown.
Oh.
Dungy, 6 years. Gruden, 6 years. Dungy's teams scored more points than Gruden's.
Ouch.
That was a shocker.
With Trent Dilfer.
Yes. And, of course, I see Dungy the next day after the story came out, and he's giving me that look in the PR department. What are you doing, Kaufman? I go, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm doing facts. That's what I'm doing. And so anyway, I just think Dungy's going to talk more about culture.
Oh, you mean Gruden saw you?
Yeah, yeah, Gruden saw me. And, you know,
and Dungy called you and says, 2 years too late. I don't know what you're doing.
And by the way, you know, neither guy's numbers were very impressive offensively. You know, because Gruden's teams were led by that defense. Let's be honest. Especially in 0-2, certainly. But, you know, John changed the offense around. And by the playoff time, the Buck offense in 0-2 was very good. It was very good.
How much, you know, again, Steve brought this up about last year. You know, Gruden came and he spent the whole practice and spent time, hour or so, 90 minutes with Cutter in his office. Is that going to happen?
I don't think that'll happen, Lee. I don't think
I don't think so either, because I think Dungy and Cutter, I was going to say they have a frosty relationship. I'm not sure they have any relationship.
You're right. And, of course, Cutter and Gruden over the years, you know, Gruden was doing games with the Falcons. He would talk to Cutter in his preparation over there. He was doing games with the Bucks. He would talk to Cutter. I'm not sure Cutter and Dungy have that kind of
relationship. Well, I know that Lovie Smith's camp put out a very ugly rumor about Cutter, or implied Cutter was, and I'm not going to go into detail because, and rightly so, Dirk Cutter gets completely bent out of shape about it, and he's had cross words with Michael Florio, because Florio mentioned it once before, and I don't blame Cutter. I don't blame Cutter for getting upset about it, is what I should say. You know, Lovie Smith's camp, specifically Lovie's son, put out some ugly rumors to try to cover for Lovie, who is on thin ice in Illinois. Oh, what a shock. I don't think Dungy as close as he is to Lovie. I don't suspect that they have any type of relationship, him and Cutter.
That'll be a good question to ask Cutter and get a sense of that. That'll be interesting. Something to, maybe there is a weird connection we don't know about, or maybe since he's been in Tampa, maybe they've had dinner.
Remember, Cutter said last year, Steve, how the players related to Gruden, and that helped fuel the Gruden rumors a little bit.
It did. Yeah. It did. Yeah, I was just curious your sage approach here now, right now. Before we hit back to the preseason game and some key points there, Ira, I'm just going to burn through on iTunes. There were 5-6 reviews this month, and I'll paraphrase some of them.
Are there a couple I'm not going to want to hear over there?
Well, of course, yeah. Right. This one says, this one is labeled 5 stars, 5-star rating. It says, from Meanwhile Back at the Ranch, he explains that When I'm 64 was the Beatles song you were trying to sing the other day.
And you two hooligans didn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah, it hit me later that night. And so he loves the podcast. Next one says, I'm done. He hates the podcast. Hanks, 5757. The guy claims that Lee has infected you, Ira. And now you're prone to crazy talk. And he can't take it anymore.
What's his handle? What's that guy's handle?
I said it once. I'm not giving him a double plug for that. Next one. This guy, 1 star, says too much self-promotion, that every 10 minutes you just self-promote, Ira. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous nonsense, of course. Next one, 5-star rating, great podcast. Guy loves the podcast, doesn't miss an episode. He just moved, and now he can still stay attached to the Bucks very well, and he wants to go to a preseason game with us. How about that?
I guess we're not everybody's cup of tea, DeCamper.
No.
And next one down the line, Ira, from Matt with a bunch of numbers after his name. I'll read this one verbatim because it's very funny. Ira is the greatest man of all time. He deserves endless amounts of beet salad from all
Tell
over.
Tell that to the guy who's complaining about the self-promotion. We didn't put this guy up to it.
Endless amounts of beet salad from all over the land. Amazing insight check. Laughs and enthusiasm check. Sexiness check.
You could have skipped out.
Download this podcast to treat your ears. Great work, guys. Can't forget the Joes as well. So we'll leave it at that.
Well, the Vikings must be listening to the Ira Kaufman podcast. The reason why I say that is your friend Peter King, Ira. He writes for NBC Sports now. His Monday morning column. It doesn't call it Monday Morning Quarterback anymore.
It's an opus. It's
among other things,
yeah,
yes. Yeah. As some would say, tome. Okay. Well, he wrote about it. He was at Minnesota's training camp this past week. It's at their new facility, and apparently that's a palace that's similar to the Star in Dallas. And Peter King being Peter King, he can't pass up a training camp story without talking about the menu at hand.
Oh, God.
So he took a snapshot with a smartphone, a picture of the menu. On the menu, which Peter King bragged had no junk food, was beet salad.
Ooh. You know, Steve, you got to send me up to, where is it, Mankato, Minnesota or something?
Yeah.
Steve, you got to send me up.
Well, actually, it's Minneapolis. Or,
I'm going to book a trip on Fan Retreat right up to Minneapolis.
Well, their headquarters is in Minneapolis. So they have the, that's their facility is in Minneapolis. But they used to have it at Mankato State. You're right.
I'm not sure where they grow beets, but we'll get you there. We'll get you some beets, Ira. All right. I did miss one review this month. I overlooked it. It's called by Josh Bucks Fan. Great insight on the team, and I enjoy how the conversations are driven with a different outlook on the questions. Definitely keeps me in tune with the team during the slow period of time. So there you go. Anyway, Sage, let's...
We appreciate all of them.
We love them all. We love the hate. We love the love. And leave your review on any of the platforms. We always look at them. All right, Ira. Now back to that preseason game. We read your 10 takeaways. They're up there on JoeBucksFan.com. Everybody loves your 10 takeaways.
Got that thing out fast, baby. Fast. Boom.
Oh,
you were still drinking a milkshake over there.
Yeah, one of your takeaways was attendance.
Yeah, and I checked with you before I wrote it.
Yeah, I got the email around halftime, yeah. And I sent you a photo of the stadium.
Yes,
by the
did.
Way, do you see the photo I sent to you of the Braves game yesterday?
Yes.
Braves-Milwaukee, two first-place teams.
Braves right in the pennant race.
Two first-place teams, they're both independent races, end of our middle of August, virtually nobody.
Brand new stadium. New stadium.
Yeah, it would look like batting practice. Ira's got a thing about attendance. Keith Hernandez's book, this sort of related to the Bucks, because the Bucks don't have much of attendance, but Keith Hernandez, first baseman for the Cardinals and the Mets, won a couple World Series. And I can't remember, sometime in the 80s, 30% of the gross revenue for baseball, this is in the 80s, mind you, cable TV was still somewhat young at the time. 30% of the gross revenue for baseball was TV. What do you think it is now? I don't know, but I'm just...
Might have doubled.
Probably more than that. So as I've mentioned to Ira before, people that harp on attendance, that's stuck in the 70s.
Steve mentioned that, mentions it a lot, because when I talk about something at Ray J, Steve will say, Ira, it's not about the attendance. It's not about the attendance. That's not stirring up the revenues.
Well, especially not in football, but baseball's different because you got so many games. It's more money, gross money, and the sponsored revenue is more money because there's so much more visibility.
That's true.
Right? If I'm a sponsor, yeah, I can get 162 games of visibility. I'm going to...
Signage.
If you're drawing $3 million as opposed to $1 million,
right.
That's a big difference.
Exactly. So, but still, it's changed baseball, as we know. All right, Ira, back to the preseason game. Your 10 takeaways... Now, I'm going to mention one of them, since you tweaked it before, and then I'll give one that you didn't mention that I wanted to run by you. First, you said earlier, Chandler Catanzaro, the new kicker, he comes out, he misses his first extra point. Is there bedlam here at One Buck that we're not seeing in the inner walls, wondering what the heck's going on, and do we need another kicker, and how long do we go with this guy? Right now, there's no competition in camp. They got rid of the slappy who missed three field goals in a row. At practice not too long ago. So what do you think's going on here?
Well, Lee, there wouldn't be bedlam at One Buck Place in the executive suites. If we didn't put it in context, we didn't have the history. That's the problem. The problem is post-Matt Bryant, which is now a decade and still kicking well for the Falcons, and the guy's in his 40s, and the Bucks can't find a kicker. That's the story. So now you go out and you get the guy from the Jets who – I mean, when they got him, I thought, hey, this guy's probably average, but that's an improvement, Lee. And then he goes, and if he's famous for one thing, he don't miss extra points. That's his claim to fame.
And what happened?
You know, and he's better on kickoffs. Mm-hmm. Better on kickoffs than Pat Murray, who did not do a bad job on field goals last year. Wasn't bad. And then he goes, you know, you could just imagine what was going through Jason Light's mind. And I think you have a pretty good indication of what was going through Jason Light's mind.
Yeah, Jason Light was sitting directly behind me in the press box. I didn't dare turn around to look at him.
But you're looking in the mirror. You're looking right in the glass.
Yeah, I had front row in the press box, and I could see the reflections of everybody behind me, which included Shelton Quarles, Light, and a few others. And let's just say that you can only imagine what Jason Light's facial reaction was with that missed extra point. He didn't say a word. He didn't have to say a word. But I saw that reflection.
And Steve, this also goes, you know, look, you don't want to make too much of it, but... You know, one of the things that Dirk Cutter's sort of hung his hat on a little bit after a 5-11 season is we're close. We're in these games. We're 3-7, 10 games within one score. You know, we got to turn that around. If we're 6-4, it's a whole different ball game. Well, how do you win those games? You know, sometimes you win them with a couple of field goals.
and so here we,
you know, you can imagine what Cutter's thinking.
Well, I can tell you, I have a very good idea. Just from the lack of comments on Twitter, lack of comments on our website, joebucksfan.com, I'm assuming this was not broadcast on a Tampa feed. Of course, being in Miami, they had the Dolphins feed up in the press box, and as soon as that kick was missed, they cut the Cutter. They had a close-up of Cutter, and he's walking down the sidelines, and I'm just going to paraphrase what it looked like
you've
he said.
You've got to be kidding me.
You got to be freaking kidding me.
You got to be kidding me. You know, Steve, you have to have confidence in your kicker.
So no panic. Is that what you said? Not yet?
Well, there's no panic, but, I mean, this can't continue. It just can't. You got to have confidence in your kicker. It affects your game plan. It affects the way you do it. If you got a 51-yard field goal, you don't want to punt. You want to give the guy a chance, but if you don't have any confidence, Buck fans are tired of this nonsense with the kickers. They want somebody reliable that's going to kick for this team for the next 5 years.
You know,
and that's no way to start.
You said something earlier, and it was spot on. Previous football administration here created the problem where a problem didn't exist. They had nickel and dimed Matt Bryant. They didn't need to nickel and dime him. They've yet to replace him with the exception of the basketball star blew out his Achilles, Connor Barth, who was halfway decent, and he blew out his Achilles. But the previous football administration created the problem where a problem didn't exist. You know, the proverbial, let's fix something that's not broken.
By the time Bryant hangs him up when he's about 57 or whenever, the guy could be, you know, at this rate, he could be the all-time leading scorer in NFL history. I mean, Morton Anderson, I think, holds that. He's in the Hall of Fame, Morton Anderson.
I'm not saying
Bryant's a Hall of Famer, but this guy's a historic kicker.
If he keeps going, he'll be in that room.
He is a historic kicker for the Bucks.
He'll be in that room if he keeps going. His numbers are extraordinary on a lot of levels.
Very accurate, very accurate.
And that's all you want in a kicker for the most part.
What a shock.
Two things, though, for the record, for the folks wondering. Catanzaro last year was perfect on extra points with the Jets, but he did struggle mightily on extra points previously with Arizona. But he was perfect last year. Then he misses the first one with the Bucks. He missed that 53-yarder on Thursday night. Also, last year, he was perfect from 50-plus with the Jets. So
that kick never wavered, that field goal. It was off the right post, and it never moved, right? So it's not like he hooked
it wasn't a terrible strike of the ball, like a, you know, like a Charlie Brown thing or something.
But it started off bad and just continued.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll hit you with a very quick one, and I'll make it two very quick ones. Will Golston, Noah Spence, these guys didn't shine against second-unit players out there. One game, you're not going to look into it too much? You don't think that's much? Or what do you think?
Again, context. Will Golston had a bad year. Really bad year, Lee, 2017. I think he admitted it. What else could he say? He's never been much of a factor as a rusher. He's supposed to be a stud against the run. He wasn't. Noah Spence can't stay healthy. The Bucks still, there are people in this organization who think Noah Spence is going to have a monster season, who think he's going to be a major contributor. We haven't seen it. Lee, we haven't seen it. So if it doesn't happen in year three, that's a problem for Noah Spence.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a mulligan only because his rookie year, he was playing basically with one arm. You know, he had that shoulder injury. And he had some decent games even with that bum shoulder. Last year, of course, was a wash after he blew his shoulder out against Minnesota. Now, to Spence's credit, a couple times a week he has a decent practice out here where you definitely notice him. You definitely see him. He definitely flashes. Will Golston's had a terrible training camp. Steve's seen it where he's gotten chewed up by Brenston Buckner. I can't remember a play the guy's made.
Steve, would you be shocked if Golston is a roster casualty?
Yes, because they're paying him and he'll be here.
He is good at blocking kicks, though, is he not?
He's pretty good at blocking
absolutely.
Kicks.
Absolutely, he can put his hands up. The
I'm being serious. Doesn't he have a block kicker?
Sure.
Yeah.
One thing, though, the reason it caught my eye is everyone's talking about the Bucks' depth on defensive line. You got guys going against second teamers. I want to see a little more. But for Spence, look, the guy basically didn't play all last year. So I can't, he's got to ease back a little bit on some level at game speed. Whitehead comes in. He's hitting big. He's blowing people up at safety. He may have even changed the whole plan in this building. Now we hear Justin Evans is playing a lot of nickel. And Do you think Whitehead has a shot to start now as a guy who may be in, you know, changing the face of the defense?
That would be a radical change if Justin Evans is moved to nickel. Where does that leave Hargraves, number one? Evans was drafted as a safety. He's a natural safety, and I think he's going to be a good one. He's a rangy safety.
Rangy.
But Steve's right. Whitehead made an impact. He's obviously picked up the playbook very quickly, Lee. He brings a physical presence that Conte probably doesn't. Or Evans. Evans isn't overly physical. He's known more of as an athlete. Very athletic.
He's known as hitting, but too hard.
Whitehead looks like a guy that that you're going to have trouble keeping off the field, Lee.
Well, I talked to Whitehead, oddly enough, after the game. And I said, hey, you were making some plays out there. He said his mindset was be noticed.
Nice mindset.
Philosophically speaking, Ira, does it trouble you that it took a rookie to be the hard hitter of the night when this team is supposed to be putting out a different physicality attitude, as Mr. Kalfman would say?
Take it easy with your physicality, at least from a secondary standpoint. The league frowns on it.
Yeah, we're getting there, aren't we?
You know, just ask Mr. Deshaun Goldson once he became a buck.
Unemployed.
He looked like a bum because he couldn't play his natural game that he did with the 49ers. When he was, by the way, surrounded by better players, you know, than when he came to Tampa. But he was a bust. Goldson did nothing as a buck. Absolutely nothing. The only thing he did was do that show once a week that it sounded like it was from a cigar lounge. And he's got a good future in broadcasting.
A cigar lounge.
But, Steve, Whitehead's got to bring more than physicality. He's got to bring smarts, too. Got to be in the right place at the right time. But in terms of Buck debuts, that was a good one.
To his credit, he didn't get flagged, did he?
No flag, clean stuff. They took him out for concussion protocol because he got jelly legs, if you watch the replay. But he was fine. Maybe he slipped or something, or it was just a neck stinger. I'm going to ask you two questions. Are you going to tell me ludicrous or not ludicrous?
Okay. Ah.
First one, I'll say ludicrous, knowing some of the stuff you pull out of your butt.
Ira, is it ludicrous at all? Is it ludicrous to praise Todd Monken for calling a good game in the vanilla preseason game?
Yes. But having said that, all three of us have been around Todd Monken. We think he's a sharp guy. I don't want to speak for you two. We know he's a candid guy. We know from personal experience. But he's also a sharp guy. I got to give Cutter a little credit for giving Monken this opportunity. And no, Buck fans, no, it's not going to happen in New Orleans. Monken is not going to call the plays. Not going to happen unless there's a direct order from on high. And I don't think we're going to get that.
But he's on a roll against the Dolphin Slappies.
But I'm already saying don't read too much into it. But you know what? For one night, I thought he did a good job, but I'm not reading too much
into it. Well, I'm a big Monken fan, as you guys probably know. I have a little bit of history with his family. But aside from that, everywhere the guy has been, he's been with successful teams and good coaches. And especially on the college level, he's been with some of the best. You know, he was an assistant with Jimbo Fisher at LSU, and Nick Saban was the head coach. He was at Oklahoma State, offensive coordinator. Guy's name escapes me off the top of my head. I'm 40, that guy. He's proved to be a very good coach. Oh, I can't remember the last time Oklahoma State was relevant since Jimmy Johnson was coaching. Todd Monken, and then when he went to Mississippi State, he went to Brett Favre, Southern Miss. Was that the school that was going to shut football down? Anyway, they went from zero wins, and in 2 years he had him in a bowl game.
Steve, Monken's enhanced profile is going to help the Bucs this fall. I can't say it's worth a win or whatever, but it's going to help. It's another set of eyes. I think Cutter trusts him. Those two guys have a good relationship. I think it's going to work to the Buck benefit.
And my last question deals with trust, Ira. Is it ludicrous? Remember, we're still on the ludicrous theme. Is it ludicrous to say that Ronald Jones dropping an easy pass, his first one in that preseason game, and 8 rushes for 9 yards, shook some people in this building and made some people think twice?
I think the answer to that is yes. I think it is. Even though it was a preseason game, nobody's going to remember it when they line up at the Superdome, Lee. But when Dirk Cutter comes out, you know, Cutter doesn't like to say any negativity at all about a specific player. Never. I don't know what he used. Maybe struggled.
Yeah.
Struggled. That takes a lot for Cutter to even say that. You know.
Well, he did struggle.
Maybe thought he was trying too hard. He did drop the ball, like Steve mentioned. I'm starting to think, Lee, that if this continues the way it's going, don't throw him the ball. Just don't throw him the ball. And of course, defenses are going to pick up on that. Don't throw him the ball.
Yeah. Well, you're right. If a guy can't catch, you don't want to throw him the ball.
Come on. You got to be able to check down to the guy. I can catch a football. Come on. He can squeeze it and go down.
He has no experience catching the ball.
Lee. Limited. Didn't do it in high school. Didn't do it in college.
He doesn't look comfortable doing
Coach
it.
The only thing I can say is, obviously, when they worked the guy out, I'm confident the team had whoever quarterback there was threw him some passes. And if he was as stone hands as he looks, I don't know if he would have been a second round pick. So but again, you're going against air. You're not in a game situation, much less a practice situation.
And the blocking wasn't very good for him, Lee, when he was running the ball. The blocking.
Well,
wasn't very good.
Again, their offensive line is depleted. Although the starters looked pretty well. Starters did a decent job. They did a decent job. But when he did come in, you're right. They had the Bucks had guys off the street, bartenders and UPS drivers in there.
Peyton Barber's going to get the bulk of those carries.
After practice today, Ira, you were right in front of him when Dirk Cutter said, Peyton Barber, he's a three-down back in this league. I mean, what else?
Could be. Yeah,
which means he is.
But he's not Gale Sayers.
But the Bucks are not going to use a three-down back.
He doesn't want to burn him out. But every week, Cutter has more platitudes for Peyton Barber, and they love this guy. And you heard what Rondé said on the broadcast behind the scenes. So, all right,
Sage. Since I was at the game.
Okay.
Two quick points. One, you were mentioning how I didn't see the broadcast outside of bits and pieces of the Miami feed. And you said how Mike Smith, every time they showed him, he was dour and has head buried.
Holding his head, yeah.
He was giddy after the game. When I walked into the locker room, he was right there at the entrance. Oh, hi, Mike. How you doing? It was almost like he was sneaking up on you. Like you would sneak up when someone breaking into your door and they break through the door. Oh, you're right there.
That's right.
But he was very chipper, very big smile on his face, which was just the opposite of the locker room. The Bucks, if you didn't know any better, when they came off the field and afterwards in the locker room after the cool down period, when the coaches have their little chat with the team and then they let the media in, their demeanor was as if they lost. It was very, very businesslike.
Maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. It was almost like, okay, we won, big deal, let's go, we got work to do. Gerald McCoy, I thought, summed it up perfectly. Anytime they keep score, you want to win, but we have a job to do. And they went to talk about how the rush defense was lousy. But the whole locker room, not one or two guys, the whole locker room, it was very, okay, we got the job done. Let's get out of here. Let's go home.
Could be a sign of added maturity in that locker room.
Sage, how do you want to end this podcast?
I want to say that I am very curious to see how many fights break out in Music City in Nashville this week, Stephen. And to all the Buck fans out there, keep the faith. This ain't a bad football team. There you go.